Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. It's September 6, 2022. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Claire Yoder. Welcome, Claire. I am so glad that we finally could get together.
Thank you, Gloria.
Well, we start at the beginning, and I'm pretty sure that you weren't born in Oregon. So tell me, where were you born?
I actually was born in Oregon. I was born in Corvallis, Oregon. So I've lived here my whole life.
Well, I've already learned something new. So was Corvallis a home area, say, for your parents? Did you have other relatives there as well?
No, my father went to graduate school at Oregon State University. And so my parents moved up there maybe 2 years before I was born. And then I was born there. And then a week after I was born, we moved to Astoria because my dad had graduated and I was born about 3 months after he graduated. So my mom stayed there because she worked at the hospital. So she stayed, gave birth to me, and then we moved up to Astoria.
There was a lot going on in your family.
Yep.
So where was your parents' home area?
Well, then my parents are from California. My dad is from the Bay Area, like Hayward, Oakland. And then my mom is from Nevada City. It's in the Sierra Nevadas.
How many siblings do you have and where do you fit in the family?
I have two siblings and I am in the middle.
So what are they? Older brother, sister?
I have an older brother and a younger brother. But my older brother, I did not grow up with. I met him in 2018. So
there's a story there, obviously.
There is. I decided to do ancestry DNA, really, because I wanted to find out more about my background. My daughter and I both did it. And he popped up. And I sent him an email saying, wow, it looks like we're really close relatives, but I don't know you. And he told me that he was born in Cocoa Beach, Florida in 1967. And my mom gave birth to him. And then she came out to college at Merrillhurst and her family never knew. She lived with her aunt there in Florida. So I found out a lot more about my mother after that. She had actually died when Jay and I met. She died when I was 16. And so I couldn't ask her about it, but I did ask her friends. So Claire, who I'm named after, was her one of her college roommates. And I was like, Claire, so tell me. I know she started college and was her roommate in 1967. And so I said, let's go out to lunch. I'd love to talk with you about this. She's like, wow, what do you know? So this was like in March of 2018. And he came out and visited in September. And actually, he sent me some pictures a couple of days ago. It was exactly 4 years ago. A couple of days ago that he and his wife came out and they met me and they met my brother, my younger brother, Ben, who I grew up with, and they met my Aunt Claire. And so for him, it was really nice to hear that he had always wondered, like, you know, why didn't she want me? And for him to hear that, like, when she came to college, my Aunt Claire was like, she basically cried every single night. She wanted you to have a better life than she would have been able to give you. And so, yeah, so I think it was nice for him to hear that he was loved and missed, you know, and wasn't discarded or something. So, yeah.
So she had made the difficult decision to give him up for adoption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's actually a really wonderful book out there called The Girls Who Went Away. And it's about girls who had pregnancies and relinquished their children between 1945 and 1973 when Roe v. Wade came into being. So, and actually it's kind of amazing because since I met Jay, I have met so many people who either they have a parent who that same thing happened to, or they were a child who was given up for adoption, or maybe their mother got pregnant and had them. And so they got married, you know, like that. But it was, you know, this pregnancy before marriage was happening before, you know, 1970. So, yeah. And, you know, I think since my mother had died in 1991, it was really meaningful for me that there was another part of her out there in the world. And he is a wonderful man. Like, he is just, he's got the biggest heart. He is, yeah, she would have been so proud of him. So, yeah.
What an amazing story.
Yeah.
We just never know, do we?
Yeah, we never know. You're right. Yeah. I keep thinking to myself, well, you know, in like 30 years, will Mia find out some secret about me? And I'm like, I don't know any secret. She probably knows too much about me. Mom, it's too much information. So.
Getting back to you growing up, did you grow up in Astoria or did your family then move again?
We moved again when I was six, moved to Southern Oregon to Medford. And I lived there until graduation from high school. My dad was a forester, so we always lived in places where there were forests.
I want to talk to you about some things that you've done in the last couple of years, so we're going to jump ahead pretty quickly here. So You graduated from high school, and what came next, and how did you make that decision?
Well, my mom had died in my junior year of high school. I really wanted to go away for college, but at that time, we couldn't swing it, because I really wanted to go to Mount Holyoke. That was like my dream. But I ended up going to Oregon State, and I was actually just telling my daughter this morning, I was like, it was kind of my fallback school, but I got an amazing education. I'm so happy that I ended up going there. I actually studied abroad when I was there for a year. I studied abroad in England, and that was an amazing experience and kind of ignited I love traveling internationally. And so...
So what was your major and how soon did you make that decision? Or did you just kind of know going in what?
Well, I think because my mom had cancer and was on hospice. So I was really interested in the health field. So when I went to college, I majored in biology. And when I was there, I was volunteering at the hospital and talking with the nurses and was just felt like that was really a fit with who I was and kind of the work life I wanted. Nurses get to spend a lot more time with patients than physicians do. And so while I was there, I was looking into nursing programs. And because I was getting to the end of my bachelor's, I wanted an accelerated nursing program. And then I wanted to go on my master's degree. So my next step was I went back east to Philadelphia. I went to University of Pennsylvania. And that is where I met Andrew.
Why did you pick that school so far away?
Well, first of all, I was interested actually in going to University of California in San Francisco, but the year that I was planning to go, they had actually shut down admissions for a year because they were revamping their program. And so they sent me a list of all the other programs in the country. And so I sent away to those and I ended up applying to two, to Columbia and University of Pennsylvania. And when I was at University of Pennsylvania, I met actually a student who had been at Columbia and she said, it's really hard to get your classes. And then the other thing, I got lost in Queens trying to find their campus. Like, I just felt a little overwhelmed in New York City. And when I was in Philadelphia, one of the admissions people was like, oh, you're from Oregon? You don't know anybody here? And she actually connected me with a group of nursing students and nursing faculty. They were having like a meeting of like the Student Nursing Association. And so she hooked me up with them and I got to go out to dinner and have, and I also felt like someone would notice if I didn't show up. You know, I felt more of a feeling of, I don't know, connection, I guess, there. So I ended up going there and it was one of the best decisions because I met my sweet husband of 22 years almost.
So how long was this program going to be in Philadelphia?
So it was 2.5 years.
And you would end up with what degree?
A bachelor's in nursing and a master's in nursing. So pediatric nurse practitioner.
So we're going to talk briefly about this wonderful man. But first, as you were growing up, was church a part of your life?
You know, it's kind of funny because it wasn't a part of my family's life. I was baptized in the Catholic Church when I was young. My mom was Catholic, but my family was a ski family. So we went skiing on the weekends and we didn't really ever attend church at all. But I had this babysitter that I grew up with who would take me with her to church. And then my best friend's dad was a pastor. So I actually went to church a fair amount when I was growing up, even though my family didn't.
And you said pastor, so I'm guessing maybe some of the churches that you attended at that time weren't Catholic?
They were not. No, they were more, I'm not actually sure what my babysitters, and she's my babysitter, but kind of, she wasn't that much older than me, so also friend. But her church was, it was some sort of, they were both like evangelical churches, I would say. My best friend's dad, it was a non-denominational evangelical church. Very different than Portland Mennonite or the Catholic Church.
So tell me about meeting this Andrew Yoder.
Okay, so I met him, well, I moved into my apartment in Philadelphia and he lived across the hall from me. Actually, the woman who showed me the apartment said, oh, there's this lovely woman across the hall, Amy. She lives there with her husband and her brother. And so she said, if you need anything, you could just ask her. And I had a year, now I'm going to go off on a tangent, but I had this year between finishing my bachelor's and starting at University of Pennsylvania. And I worked as a event planner during that year. So I was based out of Seattle, but it was all over the country. So I had about 300,000 flight miles that year. So I flew with educator. So it would be an educator who was doing continuing education for teachers. So I would fly out on a Sunday night and I would meet them in some city. And I'd usually pick up a car, and then the educator and I would drive between places, and I was coordinating the event. So there would be like Kelly Temps, who would be doing the registration, and I would coordinate with the hotel and like the venue, making sure that everything was working and that we had the food we were supposed to have. And so it was actually an amazing job, but they knew I was going to be going to school in Philadelphia. And so the couple of weeks before I finished, they let me have the car over the weekend. And so I just stayed for those weekends. So that's how I found the apartment. And now I'm trying to remember how I got onto this subject.
Because across the hall was this family, yes, that was open to anybody who needed help.
Yeah. So I knocked on her door and I said, hey, I was wondering, where can I find a Target or something like that to buy some cleaning supplies? And so she and I chatted a little bit and she told me where. She was super nice. And then she shut the door and her best friend, Julie, was with her. And she said, I just met Andrew's future wife. So it's kind of funny because we didn't know this yet, but she had prophesied that we were going to end up together.
This was the brother who lived there with her.
Yeah, this is the brother. Right. Right. Yeah. And Amy is like the sister that I never had. So yeah, I lucked out in the marriage department. I got like this amazing sister and Andrew. So yeah.
So how soon after you knocked on that door, did you actually meet and tell me just how all that kind of came about?
Probably like a week or two later. My dad had mailed me this gigantic box, like freight shipped me this box that he's very handy. And so it was a box that, so the box became an armoire. Inside was my futon bed and bookcases and the top for a desk. So I kind of had the furniture that I needed, you know, the basics. It was a tiny studio, but they dropped it off outside of the apartment building. And I was like, how am I going to get up these steps? And so I was trying to haul it up with the cardboard, trying to figure it out. And Andrew came by and he's wearing his, you know, his work uniform that says Andy on it. And I was like, oh, hey, he said, can I help you with anything? And I was like, sure, I need to get this up into my apartment. So he helped me move that stuff up. And then what else? But we didn't really talk much. And then maybe a week later, I was trying to open my window because I didn't realize what humidity truly was until I moved there. And Oregon does not have humidity except when it's cold out. And it was so hot. And this apartment was in the middle of the building and it was so hot. And so I was trying to like bang open the painted shut windows in this building was like 200 years old. So it's also old and there's all sorts of issues. So I'm trying to bang it open. And all of a sudden this cat is like outside of the window. And it was in the kitchen window and it's on the first floor. So it was occluded, you know, it had the, like the marbly kind of, so you couldn't see in and see people. And so I was scared. I was like, oh my gosh. And then I look out and there's this cat. And then Andrew comes around the corner and he's like, oh, hey, you need some help there? And I said, sure, thanks. And it was a little cheesy because he's like, oh, let me get my boot buddy, which is like a little knife in your boot. And I don't know, I feel like he kind of reminded me of people that I grew up with in Southern Oregon. And then we just started talking and we actually had so much in common. And so, yeah, that was the start of it.
So moving along again, how did you end up in Portland, Oregon? Or in Milwaukee, or wherever you came to?
Yeah, so Andrew and I, when we decided we were going to get married, which that was a whole, there was a time at which Andrew's sister said, if I was wrong, you're never going to get married. But when we finally decided to get married, and we were talking about where I said, you know, I can't stand the East Coast. I'm a West Coast girl. I love the trees. I love the rain. I love the winters that are green. And it was a big move for him because all of his family lived within 3 hours of Philadelphia. And he's got 9 aunts and uncles and all their families. So it was very different. And so when we decided to move out here, we talked about like living in Seattle or down in San Francisco or Portland. And Seattle just has so many issues. Anyways, because San Francisco is too expensive, Seattle had really horrible traffic and everything, Portland just seemed like we would be about 5 hours away from my dad, so not too far. But I really didn't want to go back to Southern Oregon. I like living in a bigger city. And so we moved to Portland, and we were first in Wilsonville, and then Andrew got a job in Milwaukee. And so we ended up moving kind of close to where his job was.
But you were married by the time you moved here?
We got married 5 weeks after we moved here. Because we got married out here.
And how soon after you got to Portland did you discover Portland Mennonite Church? What's that story?
Oh, we actually discovered it before we even left Philadelphia. So we did pre-marriage counseling with this wonderful woman, Arbutus Sider, who was a marriage and family counselor in the Philadelphia area. And she was so great. So she used to be neighbors with Wendell Nicely. Anyways, whoever the pastor of Seattle Mennonite Church at the time was. And so she knew who we were and that we were not the typical, you know, Mennonite couple that, you know, grew up in Ohio and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, we were kind of from the different coasts and neither of us had grown up in the Mennonite church. But she was really good at getting me to shut up and Andrew to talk, which was really a feat unto itself. So she contacted her friend and said, you know, there's a couple of churches down there. What do you think is a good fit? And he said, you know, I think Portland Mennonite, based on who they are, sounds like a good fit. And so we had actually asked Rod if he would perform the wedding. And so we were like, well, we better attend his church since he's performing the wedding. And then honestly, I remember one of our first days there, Bill and Esther McCoy, like we were walking up the steps and they were like, oh, welcome to Portland Mennonite Church. And it was just, 22 years later, we're still here. So it really became our home. And I remember actually talking to Arbutus and we were like, Andrew had come from a family where they went to church like 4 or 5 times a week. And it was very involved. There was also some hypocrisy in it. And he was a little jaded. And then, you know, I'd grown up kind of with this weird mix of church. And so when we were meeting with Arbutus, we had said, do we have to go every Sunday? And she's like, no, this is your choice. And she's like, you want to shoot for 3 Sundays a month? And we're like, okay. So when we started at PMC, we go all the time. And it's really because it's a home for us. And we feel really connected. And honestly, like we've talked about moving. And because of PMC, that's been a huge reason not to move to another area. So
you moved here in
2000.
So what kind of nursing did you decide to do when you moved here? Tell me a bit of your employment story.
So when I first moved here, the first like full-time career job that I got was working at Dornbecker Children's Hospital as an acute care nurse. And I was looking for a nurse practitioner position at that time. And then about a year later, almost exactly a year later, I started also working part-time for a pediatric clinic as a nurse practitioner. So I was doing those two things at the same time. because I really wanted to work as a nurse practitioner since I'd gotten my master's. And then after we had Mia, I'd been working as a nurse for about 4 years. I had my master's degree and somebody said, hey, anybody with their master's, are you interested in teaching? And so I kind of answered that call and said, I'll try it out. And I just loved it. It was a really great fit for me. I really enjoyed it. I like seeing students kind of have that aha. They're also so idealistic about nursing. Like they look at nursing the way that I want to be a nurse. And so, yeah. So, and then I've been teaching now for 18 years, starting my 18th year now. I teach at the University of Portland.
And I'm guessing you've seen a lot of changes in those 18 years.
Most definitely, yes. Really, much more of a shift towards upstream health, community health, and working to address social determinants of health so people don't end up in the hospital. I've also seen like our healthcare system is really kind of at a breaking point. Honestly, this last couple of years has been, you know, the toughest. And I've seen a lot of people leave the nursing workforce, which is really sad to me.
And some of that's due to the pandemic, but not totally, would you say?
Yeah, I would say some of it due to the pandemic. And I guess the pandemic kind of laid open to a lot of the issues that were going on for people. So a lot of nurses, they may have left the acute care setting and gone into community settings, but also quite a few just left. They were like, it's too stressful. Like, I don't want my life to look like this. So.
And you've also done some more traveling mm-hmm. with your profession, I think, some of it. Talk a bit about how did you put those two together? It sounds like it was a pretty easy decision, but talk a bit about some of the places you've been and why and what you've been doing.
Well, back in 2012, I went to Pátzcuaro. It's in Michoacán. There, midwives do the first 6 months of pediatric care. And so as a pediatric nurse, I went down and I was kind of teaching a nurse practitioner. I was teaching these mostly indigenous midwives about, you know, what's normal care, what's normal to expect in the first 6 months of life. It was at the end of their midwifery training. And I loved that. It was wonderful. And I continued to be really interested and wanted to travel and do this kind of thing more. And a friend of mine who also loves to travel, I was at this kind of crossroads with work where I had to decide, do I want to go in this direction or this direction? And she said, you know what, you should just go with me to Rwanda. And I was like, oh my God, I would love to go to Rwanda. But I got a 10-year-old at home. Andrew's got a job. How would we do this? It ended up, everything fell into place for us to go to Rwanda for a year. So the whole family went. And it was for a full year. And it really changed, I think, who we are. It changed who we are. We're as a family as well.
Can you say more about that?
Well, I think that before we went, we were really focused on, I felt really caught up in the, my friends' kids are doing all these lessons and, you know, activities. And so my kids should be. And it seems like most nights of the week, Andrew and I, like Andrew is doing a church thing or I was, or I had a work thing or Andrew did. We were kind of all highly scheduled and not always together. And spending that year in Rwanda, we spent a lot more time together, the three of us. And I actually, when we came back, I was kind of sad. I was like, we had dinner together every single night. In the evenings, we might play cards. These things that when we came back and our life started getting scheduled again. But honestly, during COVID, it's kind of like we went back into that insular thing again. Although I know myself and like Andrew was going to, he did have like maybe a month where he was at home, but he was considered essential because their work does work with distribution and stuff. And so Mia and I, though, we were stuck at home. And so I definitely missed interacting with people like during my day. But I did love having my family close by and just doing stuff together and like the inside jokes and those kinds of things that they're really special. And I think I also realized boy, I'm really lucky, you know, that I have this experience. So, yeah. But I think Rwanda gave us our first taste of that because, you know, we would go off and do our things, but then we'd always come together, you know, in the evenings. And you're not spending a lot of time outside in the evenings there because malaria, you know, you're avoiding mosquitoes. And so, yeah, it was just a lot more family time. And weekends, we would go with other families on trips. But it was a lot of time together and exploring, you know, and experiencing new things together. So not just being stuck together, but yeah, exploring together.
And you've continued to do some traveling without your family in the last years. Talk briefly about some of the other places that you've been.
Well, so this year has been a big traveling year for me. I went to Malawi with work because we are taking nursing students next year. So this year we took 4 engineering students and they were completing a project that was started pre-COVID and then everything shut down so they couldn't do it. So this last May they were able to put in this irrigation system for a big school there. So the nursing faculty, we went because we were kind of figuring out what will we have students do here. So that was wonderful. And honestly, I think we made the connections we wanted, but it was like 6 days a week, some days 10 hours a day, doing vision screening, and then just travel because we were in some pretty remote areas. It was not vacation. There was one opportunity where we could have driven through this game park and a couple of us decided not to because I'm like, I've done that. Like, I don't need to. And it just sounded horrible on horrible roads to drive through there. And so I didn't do that. But we really didn't do any touristy things there. It was all really going out and doing all these vision screenings, like 1,800 people. It was amazing. And it was wonderful. It was, you know, we got to work with such a wide variety. I mean, some people had never been to school in their lives, to, you know, people who had college educations, but in Malawi, it's like the 16th poorest in the world. And so people aren't making a lot of money. And so glasses are really considered a luxury. And it was wonderful to be able to kind of expand access for people. And we got to see beautiful countryside and learn a lot about the country. And we also worked with a girls' school there.
So it sounds like you're going back next year.
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah. I'm very excited. We actually had a meeting about it earlier today and we're thinking about it. And, you know, really trying to be mindful and around ethics. And so we go back to the same place every year and we really provide service to people and we're not kind of going in, doing something and then taking off. We're not replacing healthcare in that setting. We're there to provide support for the local people who are doing amazing work. But what we can bring in are resources and support and ideas, you know, and so doing whatever, you know, kind of really meeting people where they're at and supporting what they're already doing.
And what occurs to me is that you're building relationships, which is always the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. That was actually my favorite part of the whole thing, was the building relationships. Yeah.
Well, Claire, we could go on and on as far as I'm concerned, but we're out of time already.
Okay. Although I want to tell you that I thought we were going to talk about my trip to Jerusalem and Palestine. So I'm bummed we couldn't talk about that because that was also that altered a lot of my own thinking and passions. But maybe another time you and I can talk about it outside.
Well, now people can ask you about it at church since we didn't get a chance to do it on COVID Chronicles.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Claire, thank you so much for taking the time to share some of your amazing stories with us.
Thank you, Gloria, for asking me. This has been, it's just been fun talking with you. So thank you.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.